And in our discussion about the lesser-known people of the Bible, we've kind of gone all over the Old and New Testament, kind of flip-flopping, giving you some variety to kind of break up the monotony of going through one book from cover to cover. And so to begin with Judges, we're going to go to Joshua to get some context. And I want to begin in Joshua chapter 23. I would recommend, if you've never really done an extensive read or study of Joshua, it's not that hard of a book. There's a lot less historical background you have to know to kind of work your way through. So it's a very interesting book because it's Israelites, the second generation that came out of Egypt, not being led by Moses, who was their main go-to guy. And so when they go through Joshua, their now new leader, it's more of a military kind of book because they're going through conquest and so on. And a lot of battles are taking place in which we find them having to do certain things in certain ways for God to bless that battle. So it's an interesting book, as I'm trying to say. Some parts can get a bit slow in the Bible, so you know Joshua is not one of those. But I want to go towards the very end to get some context here. Basically, if you want a really bird's eye view of what we're looking at here in Joshua 23, we have Joshua, who is, again, the leader after Moses. He went through all the military campaigns of them crossing over the Jordan River in a miraculous way. They went through the conquest of Canaan. They won a lot of battles. They lost some battles because of some various issues. But overall now they have conquered the land that God promised to Abraham and his descendants. It's now finally here. They made it. And they were given a very specific command on how they were to treat the original inhabitants of this land and their idols. Can you give me a Cliff Notes version of what their overall command was in regards to the inhabitants? Kill them or run them off. Wipe them out. Do not allow them to stay there. Don't make them tribute states. You do not want their influence around you. They're going to lead you astray. Do not spare them. And yet, guess what happened? They spared them. They kept them as tributes. They kept them as slaves. They eventually, a generation or two later, would allow their families to intermarry with the former inhabitants, and their idols were still very much there. And we're going to see the repercussion of that in the entirety of the book of Judges. Larry?
One thing I find very interesting in reading is when God promised the land to them as a gift, they didn't get it without work.
Right.
They had something to do to get it.
Yeah, they had to have faith and they had to believe that the land was going to be theirs, right? But they had things they had to do to maintain that land. And
we have a promise of the land. It's something we've got to do.
Right. Right. God's not going to give us a blank check without us doing any of the work, you know. So it's one of those things that we see consistently in Scripture. So in Joshua chapter 23, after they've kind of conquered the majority of the land, God has said, all right, y'all did it. You have Joshua here as an old guy. Now, he's well advanced in years. How old do you reckon you think he is? What's an old guy? 100? Well, he died 110, so you're not far off. Now, when you get to 110 and the Bible says you are advanced in age, that's the most polite way you can say it in the entire world. So Joshua chapter 23, we're going to go through 23 and 24 of this book to kind of get a context of what we're walking into for Judges. So I'm not in a rush to really jump right into the text of Judges quite yet. We need to kind of know what we're looking at. So Joshua 23. Now, it came to pass, after a long time, after the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies around about, that Joshua was old and advanced in age. And Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, for their heads, for their judges, for their officers, and said to them, let's just kind of pause for a minute. When we introduced the Israelites back in talking about the book of Exodus, it was just one family. And now we have a nation that it's organized well. They've gone through military campaigns. They've gone through at least two generations from their captivity in Egypt. They've come a long way, is the point I'm trying to drive home. Verse 2, part B. I am old, advanced in age. You have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he who has fought for you. So Joshua is fully aware they would not have won these victories were it not for the power of the Lord. See, I have divided to you by lot these nations that remain to be an inheritance for your tribes from the Jordan, with all the nations that I have cut off as far as the great sea westward. What is the great sea westward? Mediterranean Sea, right? That's kind of the idea here. And the Lord your God will expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight. So you shall possess their land as the Lord your God promised you. One little nuance here. Do you know what nation it was that was on the west coast of this land that we're talking about here? It was the Philistines. If there's going to be one enemy that's going to be a thorn in the side of Israel from basically this point forward, it's going to be the Philistines. Right? Remember, there was a giant, right? What was his name? Goliath, who was of the Philistines, right? He was their champion. This is the nation that he's saying, look, if you guys keep going the same direction that we've been going and you remain faithful, these nations aren't going to stand, right? Verse 6, therefore, be very courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, lest you turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left. That sounds kind of familiar, because at the very end of the book of Deuteronomy, you've got this last little speech that Moses gets to give to Joshua and to the people of Israel. And that's almost the exact same thing that all these years before, Moses told him, says, look, be courageous, be strong, don't be afraid, because if you keep doing what this book says, God's going to bless you, right? So verse 7, and lest you go among these nations, these who remain among you, you shall not make mention of their name of their gods, nor cause anyone to swear by them. You shall not serve them, nor bow down to them, but you shall hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have done to this day. So he has one strong warning. What's that warning? Do not allow these nations to remain. Don't go into them. Don't allow these foreign gods to corrupt what you're doing, because the power that gave us the victory, God, doesn't want you to. Verse 9. For the Lord has driven out from before you great and strong nations, but as for you, no one has been able to stand against you to this day. One man of you shall chase 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you, as he promised you. Therefore, take careful heed to yourselves that you love the Lord your God. Pretty good advice, right? If you love God, you're going to do what he says, right? We understand that correlation pretty clearly. Verse 12, or else, if indeed you do go back and cling to the remnant of these nations, these that remain among you, and make marriages with them, and go into them, and they to you, know for certain that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps to you, and scourges on your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given to you. Almost like he knows exactly what they're prone to do. Now, we know that Moses went through terrible experiences with the Israelites while they were from Egypt to outside the Jordan River all the way after all those years. Moses knew what they were capable of, what their tendencies were, what human nature is, because he experienced it. And he's saying to Joshua, and Joshua is saying to them, look, guys, we know what temptations are out there. This is going to be a huge temptation for you. It's just allow them to exist peacefully for a generation. They're attractive. They're wealthy. They've got this land. Maybe you want to cause peace through marriage. Don't do that. That's not going to be the way that it's going to be successful for you, because God is the power behind your victories, and he's not going to support this kind of behavior. All right, verse 14. Behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. What's that mean? He's going to die. It's an interesting way that he said it, though. It's kind of a small thing to pick up on. I'm going the way of all the earth. And you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing has failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spoke concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one word of them has failed. He says, you guys look at God's track record. What he says is true is true. What he says is false is false. Whenever he says, if you do this, I will do this in response to it. But if you do this, I'll do this in response to it. God's always been true and faithful. You tested him through experience, and God's true. Therefore, verse 15, it shall come to pass that as all the good things have come upon you, which the Lord your God has promised you, so the Lord will bring upon you all harmful things until he has destroyed you from this good land, which the Lord your God has given you. When you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods and bowed down to them, and then the anger of the Lord will burn against you, and you will perish quickly from the good land which he has given you. So again, that reiteration of God is going to bless you conditionally is how we sometimes say it. We sometimes, in response to other individuals and their claims, will kind of think of God as looking down on them and just waiting for them to mess up. I don't think that's accurate. From every kind of nuance that we get from the mind, the emotion of our Creator, he doesn't want us to fail. He doesn't want us to be lost in any way. And so when he's saying here, make sure that you don't violate this covenant, that you don't break this one big rule for you guys, he's not saying that God's waiting for them to fail. He's simply saying, here's a reality of the consequences if you allow yourself to be pulled away into idolatry, which, by the way, is the huge thing that Israel fell into time and time again. Idolatry was their major problem. And for a lot of things, it is our problem as well. We put something else before God, who needs to be number one in our hearts and our lives and our actions and so on. And we say, well, yes, he's a part of my life. No, he is your life. That's the main temptation, is to simply just kind of categorize God into your life. That's not how it works. You couldn't be an Israelite that was saved from captivity in Egypt and say, well, God's a pretty important part of my life. No, he saved you. You were a slave to sin. You were a slave to Egypt. He saved you from that. He is your life. He bought you with a price. So that's the whole thing here in Joshua 23 as an intro to the book of Judges, is we're seeing that Joshua, as an old man, mere 110, is saying, look, guys, very bluntly, very plainly, I don't know if you've experienced this or if you've heard of this before, but sometimes I'm told when you get a little bit older, there's a point that you reach when you're just kind of done being polite. You can be nice and you can be cordial and you can be kind of happy, but my grandmother never hides her feelings. She's 91 this year, and when I ask her what she thinks about something, you got to be careful how you ask that question, because she will just tell you at the drop of a hat exactly how she feels. This to me is Joshua saying, look, you know, I've dealt with you guys politically for years. We won all these victories, conquered this land by the power of God. And let me just tell you, when you walk away from God and you serve idols, he's going to stop blessing you. It's going to be hard. So don't do that. Kind of the overall arching theme here in chapter 23. So let's go to Joshua chapter 24 now. This is all, again, an intro to the book of Judges to kind of get a flavor of where we are historically. So Joshua 24. And then Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel, for their heads, for their judges, for their officers, and they presented themselves before God. So Joshua is assembling all the important leaders of Israel, right? There's no king mentioned here. Why? Because there's no king, right? There's no king but God. He is their leader. He is their monarch. He is their king. But there's no physical individual presented as king quite yet. We sometimes forget that, but it's very, very significant for the book of Judges. All right, so verse 2. And Joshua said to all the people, thus the Lord God of Israel, your fathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, dwelt on the other side of the river. What's the river referenced here in verse 2? Euphrates, you think? The Jordan, for sure, because although you have two tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan River here, specifically they're on this portion of Shechem, which is on the west side of the river. It could be the Euphrates, but the main emphasis here is the idea that we are talking about the ancestry of where these people came from, and it wasn't just down the road. It was a whole other region, whole other nationality, different culture, and so on. All right. On the other side of the river, in old times, and they served other gods. So this is kind of inference showing us that Abraham came from a place that was rich when it came to idolatry. And then I took your father Abraham, had many sons, right? And many sons had father Abraham. It's a children's song from VBS. If you don't know it, you're missing out. Anyway, verse 3. I took your father Abraham from the other side of the river, led him throughout all the land of Canaan, and multiplied his descendants and gave him Isaac. To Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. To Esau I gave the mountains of Seir to possess. Which nation came from Esau? Esau is Edom. Edom, right? So when you have Esau referenced in the Minor Prophets, we're not talking about Esau. We're talking about his descendants, the Edomites, which are significant. Okay, so to Esau I gave the mountains of Seir to possess, but Jacob and his children went down to Egypt. Also, I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt according to what I did among them. Afterwards, I brought you out, and then I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea. And the Egyptians pursued your fathers with chariots and with horsemen to the Red Sea. Now, mention here in verse 6, your fathers is a more literal reference than you may imagine. Although we're a few generations, technically, beyond the conquest here in verse 6, we're talking about, you guys know what your great-grandfather went through or your grandfather went through. Here's a reminder of what the experience, right? So verse 7. So they cried out to the Lord. He put darkness between you and the Egyptians, brought the sea upon them and covered them, and your eyes saw what I did in Egypt. Then you dwelt in the wilderness a long time. How long? 40 years for that first generation who did not believe the promise of God to give them that land until they all passed away except for Joshua and Caleb. Verse 8. And I brought you into the land of the Amorites, who dwelt on the other side of the Jordan. And they fought with you, and I gave them into your hand, that you might possess their land, and I destroyed them from before you. And then Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose to make war against Israel, and sent and called Balaam, son of Beor, to curse you. How do we reference Balaam often? He's the guy whose donkey talked to him, and he beat him anyway, right? Remember that donkey that was inspired of God? Interesting little nuance there as well. So even he's mentioned here, and they apparently knew about it. Verse 10, but I would not listen to Balaam, and therefore he continued to bless you. And so I delivered you out of his hand. And then you went over the Jordan and came to Jericho. And the men of Jericho fought against you, also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. But I delivered them into your hand. He is listing all of the tribes that were in Canaan that God gave them the victory over. Verse 12. I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out from before you, and also the two kings of the Amorites, but not with your sword or with your bow. What do you think the hornet is that's mentioned here? You remember? There was a small promise before they actually went over in which God said that I'm going to send a messenger or an angel of the Lord over to drive out these nations. And we did a study on a few instances in which we see possibly the second person of the Godhead going and doing things in the Old Testament, and that was one of them, because he says, I'm going to send the Lord or the angel of the Lord over to fight out these nations. So this hornet mentioned here in verse 12 is a reference to that. So verse 13, I have given you a land for which you did not labor, cities which you did not build, and you dwell in them. You eat of the vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant. That's interesting to me. That God allowed a civilization, a group of people, to cultivate a land, build cities, make highways for his people in the future to dwell in. Although they were wicked, they were going to be punished because of their great wickedness through the Israelites, if they did their job properly. And then God was going to utilize what they did as a reward to his people. Interesting. Verse 14. Now, therefore, now, fear the Lord. Now, that word fear we sometimes use exclusively when it comes to afraid, right? If you go to a haunted house, I grew up in a place in the east coast of Virginia called Gloucester, which no one knows. It's above Newport News and Hampton and Virginia Beach and so on, all the coast peninsulas out there on Virginia. And there's a little place called Busch Gardens. Busch Gardens is like the biggest, voted number one most beautiful amusement park in the entire world because we're partial. And we love Busch Gardens. And they do this thing at Halloween where they make it Halloween Town. Right? They make everything scary and everybody's walking around in masks. And when you're a kid, you get to go and you get to be afraid. And it's wonderful and you love it. And the scariest part is they make all the roller coasters go backwards, which is fun, believe it or not. Anyway, you thought going forwards was great, but just imagine going in reverse, just really, really fast and then down a big, it's great. Anyway, so fear used by us exclusively kind of means the idea of being afraid. In some instances, especially in Scripture, the idea of fear is more of an idea of reverence. I don't really know of a good illustration of this because my generation might have been the last one, unfortunately, that had a respect for elders. But I'm told that that used to be a thing that was pretty common. I'm told that if you were around town and you did something wrong and an elder or an adult caught you, they could whip you. They could discipline you, I mean. Or they could tell your parents, who's going to make it a whole lot worse, that you got caught doing something wrong out there in public and dragging their family name through the mud. And so the idea of respect for someone because of their position is inherently contriving this idea of fearing. Okay, so anyway, verse 14, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth. Interesting way to phrase that. Don't just go through the motions of going through what you have to do. Sincerely serve the Lord. Put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. So he's making it very clear. Look, you guys know your history. You know where you came from. You know what you've been through. You know what you've experienced. Only one God brought you from where you were to where you are. Serve him. That's the idea. Those other gods didn't do a thing for you at all. I did, what God's saying. And if it seems evil to you, this is kind of like the passage everybody references and writes on their doorposts in a way. If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So Joshua has gotten past the point of caring how he phrases things now. And he's simply saying, look, you all are going to make your own minds up. I can't control what you do. But as for me and who I can influence and control, if you will, we're going to serve the Lord. And so the people answered and said, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. What does it mean? How would you rephrase, far be it from us that we would forsake the Lord? How would we kind of rephrase that? Are you kidding? No way in the world are we going to serve any other god. All right, what we've been through, all these things that we've seen that God has done for us. Are you kidding me? There is no way in the world we're going to serve idols. Guess what they do? These are idols. I mean, it's just like that. And that's, by the way, within us too. As soon as we say, there is no way in the world that any temptation can pop up that's going to lead me into sin. Are you kidding? If that was any spark of truth to it, Christ wouldn't have had to come down to earth and die for us. Anyway, verse 17. For the Lord our God is he who brought us up and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who did those great signs in our sight, preserved us all the way that we went and among all the people through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the people, the Amorites who dwelt in the land. We also will serve the Lord. He is our God. But Joshua said to the people, "You cannot serve the Lord your God, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins." The Lord's not going to forgive? Is that a biblical contradiction? No. It's an ellipsis. He's not saying the whole sentence here, basically. He's saying, look, you can't serve your God that you want to serve and also serve idols, which you're looking to do. You can't do it. He's jealous. He wants you and you alone. I'm a jealous husband, no doubt about it. I got self-esteem issues. I know that Melissa's too good for me. And so anyone that looks at her the wrong way can guarantee you, I'm looking at you. All right? Jim here? Jim's not here. I'm making fun of Jim for a little while. I can't defend himself. My first time here, Jim walked over to Melissa, and Jim said his Jim line. If you know Jim, you know he always says this, no matter who he's talking to. I didn't know Jim at that point. He walks over straight to Melissa, my little wife. He goes, "Hey, how are you?" He goes, "I'm good. How are you?" "Well, I was good, but now I'm better now that I met you." I looked at him like, am I going to punch this guy on my tryout? I've been in the building for 30 seconds. I'm going to clock this guy right in the nose. So I just looked at him. I looked at her, and she saw my face. She's like, don't do it. Don't do it. It's not worth it. I was like, I know. I like these people. I don't like him. And then he walked over to a guy over here I've never met before, some visitor, and said the exact same line. So I go, oh, okay. Okay. We're all right. So I understand jealousy. I understand, in a way, that emotion. God says, look, I'm love, I'm peace, I'm truth, I'm righteousness. I'm also jealous. I want you. Everything that you have, everything that you are, you're mine. If you're going to serve me, you're mine. You're not going to serve me and serve somebody else. You're mine or you're nothing. That's kind of black and white, isn't it? Anyway, verse 20. You can tell Jim I said that. Just make sure you tell the whole story, not just the part that I was going to punch him. Okay, verse 20. If you forsake the Lord and serve your foreign gods, or serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after he has done you good. So there's the completion of that thought. He's not going to forgive you if you try to serve him and other gods. Verse 21. And the people said to Joshua, no, no way. But we will serve the Lord. Obviously, that's what they're intending to do. Just like Peter intended to never, never deny Jesus. And yet, humans. Verse 22. So Joshua said to the people, you are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord for yourselves to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. We testify to that. We will solemnly swear, if you will. That's what we're going to do. Now, therefore, he said, put away the foreign gods which are among you, and incline your heart to the Lord God of Israel. And the people said to Joshua, the Lord our God we will serve, and his voice we will obey. Do you see the implication that they were already kind of serving foreign gods? Already. They just got there. They didn't kill everyone like God told them to. They didn't wipe out the idol groves that were there, the statues and everything. They were already kind of saying, well, you know, this is good stuff, good property. People here like this Baal guy? Sure. You know, maybe he's okay. Anyway, so Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and made for them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. So he says, all right, we're going to put this in writing, if you will, that you are testifying, you are swearing that you are going to serve God. And then Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. What is that? Well, we're reading it, so hint, hint. All right. He took a large stone. He set it up there under the oak that was there by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness to us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord which he has spoken to us. And it shall therefore be a witness to you, lest you deny your God. And so Joshua let the people depart, each to his own inheritance, each to their own division of the land that was given to them. From what God said, each tribe should dwell in a certain location, that's where they went. They went back home. Okay, so that stone that was there was supposed to be a reminder. If they ever strayed too far from God, they're like, oh, remember that promise that we made? Well, that stone is a reminder of that. Do we have anything kind of like that we have in our lives today? A reminder of a promise that we made? This is the one that we most commonly utilize. These are getting old-fashioned, believe it or not. You know, they have tattoos that you can get now instead of a wedding ring, so you can't remove that, which, you know, in divorce rate 65% in this country, it's a great idea. But it's a little physical reminder of a promise that you made. This is not my original band. This is a little silicone deal, because I hear horror stories about people who have their fingers ripped off and they have accidents with a metal band around their finger. This is also good for when your hands swell. When it's Charleston, it's always 1,000 degrees outside with 1,000% humidity. So this is kind of more convenient for me, but I've got my original ring. It's just a little reminder of the promise that I made, you know, all those years ago. So anyway, okay, verse 29. Like I told you, I'm going real slow here because I want to set this up properly. I want you to know what happened and then what happened after it happened for Judges. You know, we could just jump in there and just knock the verses out, but I really want you to get a feel for this, because Judges of all books, Judges is just the most pertinent, because it shows you over and over and over and over again what people are like, what we are like, just over and over and over again. And either you just can't live with the guilt of being human, or you just learn to forgive yourself when God forgives you. So Judges is one of those books that's so important to help us on an emotional level, right? So anyway, all that. Verse 29. Now it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun... Okay, let's pause there. So here's a little joke for you that I have to tell you, or I lose my preaching license, okay? That's not a real thing, but here it is. Who is the only individual in Scripture that did not have a mother or father? And you're like, well, Adam obviously never had a mother or father, but he was created by the Father, so technically that counts. Who else? Well, the answer is Joshua, because he was the son of Nun. Yeah, it feels good, but also feels bad at the same time. It's just one of those things. Is it worth it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Who said stupid? Who said that? Say it to my face. Anyway, verse 29. The servant of the Lord, Joshua the son of Nun, died, being 110 years old. Now, the thing about being 110 years old back here was it wasn't as old as we think it is, right? 110 now. 100 was not 110 back then. There were some differences on how you aged. They were drinking vinegar all day, I suppose, and they were healthy and all these things. Anyway, verse 30, and they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-serah, which is in the mountains of Ephraim, on the north side of Mount Gaash. So you can go there and figure it out where it is today. Verse 31, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. That's a good thing. He was so influential in being a great leader, a great man of God, that not only during his lifetime they served the Lord the way they should, but all the people that served underneath him that outlived Joshua, they kept that tradition going. That's wonderful. That's a great thing. It's rare, but it's great. Verse 32, the bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel had brought up out of Egypt, they were buried at Shechem in the plot of the ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, which had become an inheritance of the people of Joseph. So Joseph, all the way back in Genesis, said, look, when I die, put my bones in a box. And when y'all get out of here, take my bones with you. I don't want to stay physically, my remains anyway, in Egypt. Take me back home. And they finally did it. After all this, talk about a long time coming, right? A lot had happened between Joseph and Joshua dying. Crazy amount of stuff, but it finally came to pass. Did it really matter at the end of the day where his bones were put? I mean, it mattered to him while he was alive, and they respected him enough to fulfill his request. Anyway, verse 33. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died. Who is Aaron? Moses' brother, high priest, right? So the traditional son, father-son situation passed on here. They buried him in a hill belonging to Phinehas, his son. Phinehas, this is a guy, you know, he was a bold individual. He made decisions. They were bold decisions, but they were effective. This is the guy that when people were committing fornication to serve a foreign god of the Moabites, Phinehas walked over to stop the plague that the Lord sent upon the people because they were all committing fornication to serve this idol god, took a spear and put it through two of them. This is Phinehas. And the Lord blessed him because he made a decisive action. Not encouraging you to go stab people, but I'm just saying, this is whenever you think of Phinehas, that's what he did. Anyway, which he had given to him in the mountains of Ephraim. Book of Judges. All right. So what have we learned as basically an intro to what we're about to walk into? It's been a long road. It's been 40 years. The former generation died off. Through Joshua's leadership, they marched on through the Red Sea like it was the Red, through the Jordan River like it was the Red Sea on dry ground. They went over there. They conquered the majority of the land. We now fast forward after they all got their territories divided up and where they were going to live and everything. Joshua's an old man saying, look, I'm going to be dead soon. Here's one final speech. Make sure you serve God and Him alone. He's going to keep blessing you. If you don't, this rock is going to witness our agreement. He's going to curse you like He said He would. You're not going to be successful in this land if you walk away from God. And they said, okay, we'll serve Him. And they did for all his life and all the elders who lived past him's life. And then in the book of Judges, we see things fast forward to the next generation. And that's when things get real for this book. Okay, questions, comments, additions, discussions. Anybody want a good slap on the jaw? Okay. All right, we're going to pause there for the morning. I don't want to actually get into the text yet. I wanted to kind of give you that brief intro to kind of give you an idea of what we're looking at. But I don't want to begin yet because it's all one full context here in the beginning of the book. So I want to go through that together and not to break it up, unfortunately. So if you have not done so yet, I would strongly encourage you to kind of be prepared mentally for this discussion, to be a participant in the class. So if you've not read Judges before, you can start in chapter 1. I reckon we're going to go through probably a chapter or two a class. Two is going to be maximum. We also are going to be looking at a few other resources to kind of get an idea of what we're looking at overall. So, for example, we'll be going through this in a brief way. The chart behind me lists all the judges that are named. There are some that are not specifically named and so on. And one thing to mention here to kind of get an idea of what we're looking at is this is not a linear book. We do not begin with a certain date and then end at a certain date and everything goes through a timeline like other books. This one is kind of like a compilation of comic books because you've got different timelines, different events take place in different moments. So instead of going in a historical dative narrative where we go from point A to point B, we give you the accounts of these individuals and their stories, if you will, instead of going in a chronological way. Okay, so we're going to be hopping around a little bit, and there is some overlap, so we have some estimates about when these things started, when they ended, but then they take place in different locations around the map. So we'll look at a few of those next time to kind of get our minds prepared for it. Okay, so thank you for your attention this morning. Appreciate your discussion, and we'll be dismissed now for about 18 minutes before worship.